John, I guess we'll start from there, from the start, from the start. Tell me a little bit about International Clash Day and how it got started.
Well, I host a morning show here at KEXP in Seattle, and I play a lot of Clash, among other bands. And that particular day, it was February 7th, 5 years ago, and one Clash song wasn't enough, so I played maybe two or three Clash songs. I couldn't tell you which ones, but I was just playing them, and I got back on the air and, back announced playing the Clash. And I actually had a listener say, "Man, you should just take the whole day and play Clash." And I was like, "Yeah, that's not a bad idea. They're diverse enough to not, freak everybody out, and you could probably get away with it without losing too many listeners." So I was like, "Okay." And so I got on the air and just said, "It's International Clash Day." I'm not sure where the international part came in, but it was official on that date, and I was smart enough to write that down and say, "Well, next year let's really be focused about it." So the morning show the following year did a Clash Day where I went chronologically through the Clash's career and played songs from the Clash, and then along the way, the bands that were influential. And then the next year, the other shows, our midday and afternoon shows, joined in. And now it's been a 12-hour celebration of the Clash. And then last year is when it really picked up, because our city, our mayor, and then our the county as well, our county commissioner, who, by the way, is an ex-DJ here at the station, so that doesn't hurt, declared it International Clash Day in Seattle and in King County. So it really started to pick up, and then it became more. Oh, and we had international. It became international as well, kind of like the International House of Pancakes. It became international over in Bridgewater in the UK when we tracked down Brian Smedley over there, who he's a guy around town, and that's where Joe Strummer spent some of his final years living out there. So they declared International Clash Day as well. So it really became a big deal after that, and then it's really picked up this year. And the message of Joe Strummer and the Clash seems to resonate even more in 2017, it seems like.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's funny that it's international because they were such an international band. Even from the start, they had, views beyond England and beyond the UK, from everything from the look and the art that they chose. They were such an international band. I mean, they named a record Sandinista for.
Yeah.
Tell me a little about your personal history with the Clash. What was the first moment that you realized that this is a band that matters not only to the world, but to me in particular?
Well, when I was a kid, I remember seeing on MTV, like a lot of people probably my age, I saw Rock the Casbah, and I'm like, "What is this?" And I was probably, I don't know, five, seven, maybe seven, I don't know. And as I got a little older, and the Clash were near the end of their career, is I remember signing away for Columbia Tape Club exclusively to get Clash tapes that I don't think I ever paid for. And so they all showed up. So all at once, I got all the Clash tapes, and I listened to them nonstop. And as anyone can tell you, listens to the Clash, they spoke to me. It wasn't just the social message that I was listening to and learning from, but I didn't know it at the time, but I'm getting all these different reggae influences, and I'm getting all this different rock influence and viewpoints around about the world. And it was so subversive, and I didn't even know it at the time, because the thing is, the Clash wrote great songs, and that's what always stuck with me. Like, you could put on a Clash song and you can dance, and you can also hear a socially relevant message. And it's shocking there's not more music like that out there. They, to me, as we play it leading up to Clash Day this year, it sounds better than most new music, if not all the new music we're currently playing as well.
No. You're going to find me saying I completely agree with most of the things that you're saying because
Well, imagine if the Clash were a brand new band right now with everything that's going on in the world,
Oh.
releasing songs like that. Can you imagine what people would lose their minds?
They really would. And just the progression, and you hit on something too that I think really strikes me, that there are political bands, there are bands that are socially relevant, and there are bands that make great pop tunes, but so the synchronicity between those two ideas are really just amazing. I mean, from Mick Jones is just complete pop sensibility. He's a Mott the Hoople guy from way back when, and he
Right.
really involved that sort of pop sound. And but when you combine that with Joe, and who had this crazy beat poet sort of sensibility, and it's just a complete storm of goodness. And and you know, of all the bands that have been, why are the Clash, do you think, so relevant today, even now after so many years?
I think, you know, the songs and the social message, you just don't hear. You don't hear bands playing music like that. You just don't. It just doesn't happen. And I think that's part of it. And then I think it's a little bit of the legend of Joe Strummer. I think that his untimely passing certainly doesn't hurt that legend, because you long for more messages and more songs and more words from Joe Strummer. And you go back and you hear... Like, we're going to be airing his radio shows on my show throughout Clash Day, and I've been digging into them, and he can mix music, man. I'll tell you that much. As a DJ, we're almost jealous. We're almost embarrassed to play it, because nobody can mix music like that. It was amazing. And so I think there's a little bit of Joe Strummer. Like, that legend of Joe is powering a lot of what the Clash is today, for me at least. Like, I keep going back and trying to find more of what he was trying to convey after the Clash as well. And you wonder what he would say about the world today and what kind of songs and socially relevant lyrics you would hear if he was making music. So I think that's part of it. And I think when you look back how the Clash were for the people, you know, you when they took a cut of royalties and payments so people could afford their record, you know, when they do things like that, and the shows that they would they do stands and charge very little. And you learn more and more about how much of a people's band they were. It just, I think, adds to the legend, and it makes you long for more bands like that right now.
Yeah, that's one of the things that struck me is whenever, you know, the two or three band biographies that I have, just the idea that every time that a promoter or a club would try to stop them from, you know, letting kids in the back window, they nearly revolted. And just it just strikes me that bands don't do that.
Even
with the, like, the punk rock ethos that, you know, or the scene that they kind of came out of, it was still sort of elitist in its way, but they weren't. And
for all these declarations, so all these different cities are declaring it International Clash Day now, and you have to have a local tie-in. So it's funny to get these stories, and some of them are literally in the proclamation, which I find very funny, because they tell, it's some story. Like, they talked about Joe Strummer dedicating the songs in Kent, Ohio, to somebody got shot, and you hear him, you know, here in Seattle. See, my dream is to have a Joe Strummer statue here. And I think the thing that's holding me back, or at least our government, is how I want the statue to be. And that's Joe Strummer carrying an axe. Literally an axe, not a guitar, because what had happened was that at the Paramount Theater, the Clash were here, and there were barriers between the stage and the band, and they had put up these barriers. And so he took an axe from the, you know, in case of a fire, I guess there was just an axe there, and he broke it, grabbed the axe, and he came down and started swinging away at the barriers. And so for me, maybe it's a little scary for our politicians, but that screams, I mean, if that's not Joe Strummer and the Clash, you know, taking an axe to the barriers between their fans and the band, I don't know what is.
I mean, punk rock warlord says to all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, geez, man, I'm just flashing in. You know, there's local connections here, too, as you very well know. I mean, you mentioned Rock the Casbah, and... you know, we were just talking before we went on about all the shots from that particular video that, you know, here in Austin, and, you know, Joe becoming friends with our Joe Ely,
right,
and,
right, yeah.
You know, lifelong friends. And that's another one of the appeals. And what's the word? Syncretism, I guess, is the word, where you combine two sort of disparate ideas and kind of meld them together. And the idea that this, you know, country dude from West Texas could bond with this weird punk rock beat poet like Joe Strummer, that, and they could find a kinship, is just a testament to the power of what they did and what they were kind of putting out there. So I think that's so beautiful. I mean, I'll have a question to go with that, but
well, when we're going through his radio show,
yeah.
It's fascinating
yeah.
to hear his. I wish he would have told more stories. I think.
Yeah.
But he talked about being hanging out with escapes my right now, but the guy from the Happy Mondays and them dancing to this song at the other night at midnight. And I'm like, he's hanging out with him? Like, I want to know more about that story. Like, from what I understand, from everything I've gathered from people who knew him and through these Clash days, he was open to everybody. Like, he was friends with everybody. Like, you met him and he would give the shirt off your back and he was just a solid dude. Like, he's someone you want to hang out with. I think that's what keeps coming up time and time again. And then I think when people hear Joe Strummer's words, when he talks about inclusion and he talks about immigrants' rights and he talks about all these different things, I mean, my God, it couldn't have been more timely to what's going on in the country right now. And Clash Day, I think, has grown a little bit because of that, because it in a way, it's letting his music and his words say the message that a lot of people want to say. And, you know, isn't that what music's all about? Taking their messages and applying it to your own lives. And I am blown away at the timeliness of Joe Strummer's words right now. And I think a lot of people who we've interviewed about Joe Strummer have said the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I go back to the idea that he loved the idea of a campfire. That's so beautiful to me that... that's one of his favorite things later in life, whenever he would go to all those festivals and he would just gather all these just miscreants and random characters that, yeah. you know, and just sit around a campfire because everybody's equal around a campfire. And the prescience with which like a song like Straight to Hell, which is a song that to this day still brings me to tears. You could yep. get so many ideas into one song and speak so you know, powerfully about it, about all the things that were happening in the late 70s. And, you know, he was really talking about a lot of American topics, but also British. And it brings everything together into one place.
And I think there's a sadness there, too, yeah. with knowing, and this goes for a few bands, legendary bands, that that they'll never, you'll never see them. You know, you'll yeah. never... You know, you'll never be able to have that campfire yeah. moment with Joe Strummer, which, you know, any of us would kill for. And the Clash will never play another show. And there's part of that when you hear the music, there's a sadness there as well. Because, I know a lot of us would have loved to have seen them live. If you ask me, you know, if there was a band you could have seen live in their prime, you know, that whole, yeah, you know, yeah. sitting around the dinner table after a few drinks conversation. The Clash jumps out for me in the top five for sure.
Yeah, no, I every time I watch, you know, clips from Rude Boy or something like that, and I
yeah.
if you can get past all the Greg Gage parts that you know,
right.
But all the, just the power, and, you know, I don't know where Joe got the energy and where he got that sort of charisma as a front man. It just boggles my mind, really. And even Mick with his swagger and, you know, Paul Simonon making bass players look cool, which is, you know,
oh, yeah.
sometimes hard to do. But I mean that.
Yeah. You know, I was actually down in Austin. That's where I met
yeah.
him.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah. I actually got a chance to meet him and he was in his, you know, suit that it looked like he'd been wearing for 3 days. He was smoking inside where it's next to like a no smoking sign. He had his hat tilted just right. And he had like, it looked like a black eye. I was like, boy, you have delivered everything I thought a Clash member would look like. And he was just kind of snarling at us but you know, not mean, but just, you know, smoking a cigarette and couldn't really be bothered. I was like, this is the greatest day of my life.
Playing the Brixton Rude Boy that he always
so
wanted
good.
To be.
I mean, they were real, and that's, I guess yeah. that's the point, right? Like, this is what you want in your bands now, or in any leader, really. You want authenticity. You want them to believe what they're singing or saying or playing, and you get that with a lot of artists, but I think you got that in spades with those guys. You just saw, I mean, look at, you know, you look at the cover of London Calling, you know, like that isn't, I'm going to break a guitar. That is, that dude was in the moment and it's my favorite album cover of all time because it may be Rock Photograph of all time. I know I'm not alone, but that one to me, when I saw that as a kid, I was like, okay, sign me up for that. That's what I want to see.
You know, you mentioned, I actually just showed, David, our engineer here, I've got a tattoo of Paul Simonon crushing his bass. That's my crowning achievement. But telling the story that, like, out of all the pictures they could have picked from that tour, because I forget who the photographer was, but you know, that was one of the throwaways, and they're like, no,
yeah, he was coming at him. I remember the story where he's like coming at him, and he just started just taking pictures as he was heading at him. You know, if he's going to get hit with the bass or not. But that one to me. And then, you know, as a kid, then in Seattle and seeing Kurt Cobain and seeing that on stage, you know, that's as close as I'll get, is seeing a really good destruction of a guitar. I mean, I guess it runs. I love Jimi Hendrix too. So maybe I just like people who destroy instruments.
Or The Who.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
The Glenn and Colin cover actually kind of reminds me of an idea too, because, you know, famously The Clash, you know, said no Beatles, Elvis or the Rolling Stones. But, you know, that Lennon Colin cover is a complete homage to, you know, Elvis's album. And and that album in general is such a beautiful mix of stuff. I mean, it is like a rock and roll encyclopedia. And I think that's why that record in particular blows my mind. And also Santanista over the years has grown on me considerably too. But yeah, just that idea of the worldliness, not only in message, but in musical styles. I mean, they were one of the bands that covered reggae in a way that made it their own. And it was okay
Yeah, that's how a kid like me heard reggae for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard because I wanted to know more, and that record opened me up to that. You know, it opened me up to, I didn't even know there were covers on that record, or, you know, in one minute it's the, you know, it's Clamp Down or it's Train in Vain or it's Lennon Colley, really catchy songs, and the next thing you know, I'm listening to Guns of Brixton and you know, these subversive songs. I'm listening to reggae and
Revolution
and to me,
Rock.
That, yeah, right. I mean,
which
that,
was a cover too,
reason.
But yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and I didn't, you know, being a kid, I didn't know, which was great. When you find these things out, they're doing their jobs, because then you know, a stupid kid like me is out there suddenly trying to track down these different artists and this reggae, and then I'm discovering their influences, and then it just goes from there, which is why I think London Calling is up there with Pet Sounds and Sgt. Pepper and all the other revolutionary records, and that weren't just good but great, and they were groundbreaking. And then there's a reason that album is on a lot of lists, because I mean, from beginning to end, you could put that on right now and blow people's minds. I have two kids, and I play that record for my 12-year-old, and he's just like, well, you know, The Clash is my favorite band now. I think it was three songs in, he's like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. Are they still together? Like, oh,
no,
son, but do enjoy discovering all their music.
Oh, man. And that's completely on point, because, I mean, going back to Santanista, too, it's like that's what introduced me to dub and how cool dub could be.
Do you know what the most requested song on my show is? Probably top three. It's Police on My Back. And you know who requests it? Kids.
Really?
It's little kids. Yeah. Parents call me every day almost, and they say, hey, my kid's favorite song is Police on My Back. And again, I think it's because they're chanting the days, right?
Yeah.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Little do they know, or maybe they do know, like they are listening to a very, very interesting song.
They are.
Telling them a lot of different things. But they're also learning about days of the week. So I've
And running and physical fitness.
Yeah, and running. Yeah, physical fitness and authority figures. And
That record too. Speaking of kids, I mean, they got the was it Mickey Foote's kids are on that record, the singing. That record to me is such a wild record, because they were just throwing everything against the wall. I think Joe said, "We wanted a balalaika, we're gonna get the biggest balalaika that we could find." And I don't know where I was going with that, but I just love the idea of somebody like Joe, or, you know, Mick, or even Topper, who came into the studio and just laid down what would become Rock the Casbah. And Joe came in, scribbled some lyrics, and, you know, next thing you know, it's one of their biggest hits.
Well, that's the lightning in the bottle of all great bands, right? Like, you just, what are the odds of having those group of people find each other at the right time at that, you know, and that only, it's generational, right? Like, you can count on one or two hands when that's happened.
Yeah. And it reminds me of Joe, why he was such a good DJ, because he had such an extemporaneous, and that's why he was such a great front man, too, because he could just spout off nonsense, but sound so cool doing it. He was born to be a DJ, I think. Yeah, that's it's so great. Just listening back to those his radio show is just amazing to listen to.
Oh yeah, we're very excited to air though. I mean, it's the mixing was, you know, I gotta say, as a DJ, we've been sitting here just almost bummed.
You can
like,
do,
oh, what a segue! I wish I'd done that.
Carl Perkins to you, Roy, to God knows what else.
It's just,
how do you do that?
I know, it's phenomenal, and it's I want him to DJ here.
Yeah. I mean, he had such an international upbringing too, because his dad was in the Foreign Service. So I think that probably informed a lot. I mean,
well, this goes back to it goes back to what we're talking about with immigrants' rights and people's influences. And we've been really big here at KXP about playing artists from the countries currently that are banned from entering the U.S. And you know, the amount of music that is coming out of these countries is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are people who live here in the U.S. or in Canada now that we've been playing, refugees. And it reminds you, you know, the influence of, you know, if a kid hears something from Somalia on my radio show, like, what, you know, if his parents are from there or he's never heard music from that area, what, maybe he's the next Joe Strummer.
One can only hope.
Yeah.
I really hope so.
We need one.
Yeah, we really do. But in a way, I've always thought that... it strikes me that Joe, he died of a congenital heart defect that could have killed him at 20 years old, or, you know, killed him at 50. But he went, I think, you know, sort of passing the torch on to the rest of us in a weird way. You know, he came back from his wilderness years and sort of he died quietly. And you know, it's up to us to sort of pick up where he left off. And I mean, that's how I've, you know, if not my, you know, personal, you know, psychological, political sort of life, you know, I've tried to live in a way that I think Joe would have, you know, recognized. that's maybe presumptuous on my part, but
well, I think it's a kind of a standard, and I agree. Like, when we here at the station, I think one of the reasons we're so attracted to that band and why it naturally happened here was because they represent a lot of what we're trying to do, I think, on the air. And then the way that he lived his life, I agree. And, you know, he lived a hard life, too. And he you know, if you want to talk about living life to its fullest, I mean, that's like three or four lifetimes packed into one. And we can all learn from that.
No kidding. Yeah, the Chris Solowitz, I think, biography on Joe, going and talking about his wilderness years when he was post-Clash and feeling down on himself, but somehow, just by, I think, sheer force of his will, he kind of, and, you know, help of people that he had impacted and loved him, you know, he kind of came back from that and came out with a band that, you know, I can listen to the Mescaleros, and it's still, he was spitting hot fire with the Mescaleros, and a song like Johnny Appleseed, which is another song that makes me tear up every single time I hear it. You know, he was, you know, he had never, I mean, he was back, but he had never really gone away in a sense. Like, you hear a song like Trash City with Latino Rockabilly War, and it's almost as if the Clash never ended.
Yeah, and it's his I don't know.
Oh, okay, sorry about that. yeah, go for it.
It's like his later, you know, here in Seattle, we had a really interesting sound after all those bands kind of hit their peak, right? Like, everyone was still around, and everyone, and you know, rumor has it, like, not rumor, but I guess after the Unplugged Nirvana album, there was talk that that's the direction Kurt Cobain was going, for instance. And we saw a lot of that here in Seattle, like these post bands, this grunge rock, and then it got countryfied, it kind of got mellower, but these artists didn't go away. Joe Strummer didn't go away. Like, that is the post kind of Clash sound to me, was what he was doing. You know, when I hear his stripped down version of Redemption Song. I mean, it just kills me. So I feel like he carried the torch for, I don't know, longer than I thought we'd get from the frontman from the Clash. You know, I wish we would have had more though, right?
No, but I mean, I think he gave all he could give.
Yeah, he did, then he gave out.
It's yeah, true. Exactly. You know, what's the thing about candles burning, you know, twice as bright.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So I guess, you know, to wrap up, tell us a little bit about, you know, where you want, what do you think the legacy of the Clash is? What do you think that, what do you want people to, you know, that are hearing the Clash for the first time or just starting to dig in? What do you feel like they should get out of it? Or what do you think they will find if they start digging in a little bit deeper?
What I hope that people find in the Clash now would be a friend in the murkiness that is out there right now, our political landscape, and a lot of fear and a lot of confusion. So I hope just I don't know if it's called the casual listener, but someone who listens to that, I hope they get what I get out of that as well. And that's to stand up for your rights. It's to know there's others out there fighting. And if it's a musician or a future musician listening, I hope they hear the message in the Clash, the emotion in their music, the really not ignoring the world going on around them, but taking a stand. And I hope it influences them to make music and to make socially relevant music. Because if we don't get the next Clash or someone like it out of what's going on right now, I have little hope in the future of the music industry. But I feel like it's going to happen. And I think if someone sat down, if my kid at 12 listens to a Clash record, which he is doing right now, I hope in a few years he is making music influenced by the social relevance and just the power of those songs.
And I think you hit on something too. I mean, there is hope in that's my takeaway, I think, is that there, when I listen to the Clash, I hear hope, even through the, even when they get angry, even whenever, you know, but I feel like there's hope in a
lot
of ways.
They're not just looking out for themselves.
Yeah.
They're looking out for others. And that's what gives me hope, that they're looking out for others, not just their plight. And you hear that a lot in punk songs. Sometimes it's just their lot in life. But these guys seem to be looking out for everybody. And man, if you don't take something good out of that, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Well, they're telling us to wrap up. So what day is Clash Day?
Tuesday, February 7th. And it's going to be all over the country now. We have over a dozen cities and dozens of stations now involved, and I hope it just continues to grow.
Well, I hope so too. John, thank you so much for sitting down and geeking out in the Clash with me.
Yeah, man. Anytime.
Thanks.